Good morning. Man, I am excited to be here. Are you guys excited to be here? Man, it is a great day. It has been a great week. We got another great week ahead of us. I don't know about you, but there is just an energy and excitement in the room and in town as schools are getting started, right? ACS has been going for a week, but a lot of other schools are starting, kicking up this week. And it's really exciting, whether you're starting school for the very first time as a little kid. You know, Liam started a new school this week, and he was super excited about that until about the third day. Then he was like, man, I hate school. But he started off, and he was super excited about it. You know, whether you're a little kid starting or all the way up to grad school, it's exciting time to start a new year of school. We've had people from all over the state, all over the country coming in to go to any of the several universities that we have here in town, and we're just really excited for this school year to get going. As I was thinking about the start of the new year, the start of the new school year, but while also trying to keep in mind that there are a lot of other people in the congregation who, when you say, how was your summer, they go, it was pretty much like the rest of the year. You know, they're like, all of my friends who don't work in university or in the school system, they're like, yeah, tomorrow is just like every other Monday. It's no different to me. So as I was trying to think of what we could talk about this morning that would sort of touch on everybody's situation, something came to mind that I think fits all of us where we live, and it's thinking through our relationships, thinking through godly relationships and unity. Because whether you're just starting school and you're somewhat nervous about what you're going to find, if you're going to make any friends, if people will like you, if you're a middle schooler heading into high school, you may be wondering, did those relationships I formed in middle school, are they going to transfer over to high school? And am I going to run into some bullies? When you're a freshman coming into college, you may be concerned about roommate situations and making new friends. I've met a lot of people that did the potluck situation where you just say, I'm coming to school, I don't care who my roommate is, it's just potluck. And that can be frightening. It can be frightening. I shared with my Cornerstone students that I met this week, some of which are here, that I've had some of those situations that didn't work out so well. I remember one night I came home to my dorm room, and I opened the door, and it's dark, and I turn on the light, and my roommate is just sitting on his bed like this, staring at the door. And I turn on the light, and he goes, where have you been? Now, we had no expectations that we were doing anything. I was like, what? I was like, dude, we are not married. And as I started thinking about this situation, it got creepier as I thought about it. How long had he been sitting in the dark, staring at that door, waiting for me to come home? And yeah, I switched roommates pretty quick. Maybe I shouldn't have. And that's kind of what we're talking about. Or maybe you've said goodbye to people over the summer and you're wondering, you know, are you going to pick up where you left off? But even if you're not in school and experiencing any of those kinds of things, we all have coworkers. We all have members of our family. And sadly, we all have probably others in this room that maybe were anxious about the relationships. Maybe we're a little nervous about how they're going to work out. Maybe they're unsteady. Maybe they're shaken. Maybe they are broken. Relationships are so incredibly important, especially when it comes to brothers and sisters in the church. Because Jesus said, they will know you're my disciples, how? By the love that you have for one another. John took it even further in 1 John when he said, if you do not love your brother, you cannot love me. Whoever hates his brother cannot have the love of God in him. How are we to be a people that say, yeah, we profess love and grace and all of these things, yet we can't even get along? We undercut our message. We undercut the kingdom's message. So it's incredibly important. Relationships are incredibly important. This morning, we are going to take a look at the letter to the Philippians. We're going to take a look at this letter because Paul understands just how important relationships can be. And he's writing a letter and he's very concerned about what's going on in this church. He knows that they have a lot that are going for him because he says, I pray that your love abounds more and more and I long to be with you and I hold you in my heart. And there's all this language that suggests Paul has a good relationship with the church. and that they have some good things going on. But he says, I want your love to abound more and more so that you may approve what is excellent and you may be pure and blameless. So Paul is concerned about something in the church, and it has to do with relationships. And we may wonder, is that really such a big deal? Can relationships really be that big of a deal, be that important? Well, let me tell you the story of a congregation that I know of. I might have shared this with you before. There are two churches in this really small town in Oklahoma, way kind of close to the border in Arkansas in the south. And there is a North Side Church of Christ, and there is a South Side Church of Christ. You can walk between the two in about the space that I can walk from one side of the church to the other. And so it seems ridiculous in a small town that those churches probably are the borders of this town, that two churches exist. It all started because one elder who was a baseball coach and another elder whose son played baseball, you can see where this is going, he wouldn't play this person's son because he wasn't very good. And that created this relationship tension between the two. And then they started making it all about other things, and people in the church took sides to the point where if you agreed with this elder, you sat on this side of church, and you only participated in prayers and in songs when someone from that side was leading, and vice versa. And eventually it split into two churches that are right next to each other. If you're going through that town, how much message, how much weight does the gospel hold when you can't even get along? See, Paul is writing this letter and he's concerned about some relationship issues in the church. This morning, I want you to imagine that you're the Philippians. You're not here in a big building. You are here in someone's home. Half of you are really excited because you've been working all day. You don't make a lot of money. You're in the lower class and you're going to Lydia's house, which is really nice, and she feeds people really well. And you're really excited to be there because you haven't seen your brothers and sisters and you're ready to be encouraged. The others of you are really excited because you're going to a fellow patron's home and you get to meet with your fellow Christians. And so there's an excitement about coming together when you haven't seen each other all week. And you're especially excited this morning because you've heard something special is going to happen. And it's caused you to come and overlook some of the concerns you have. And some of those concerns are you're a little nervous because there are some tensions in the church. There are two ladies, Euodia and Syntyche, who are at odds with one another. One is a Jew and one is a Roman. The Roman is saying, hey, we live here in Philippi. This is a Roman colony. I am a Roman citizen. Therefore, my rights are the rights that matter. Therefore, my voice should carry more weight. When it comes to big decisions in the church or what's going on, I'm a Roman citizen and my opinion should be listened to more than others. The other lady is Jewish, and she's saying, now, wait a second, I've been a part of this much longer than you have. My people were God's chosen long before you came on to the scene. I've been a part of this a lot longer than you have. I know my scriptures better than you do. My voice should be the one that carries the day. And so these ladies are having some conflict and issues with one another, and people are beginning to take sides, to say, yeah, I think she's got the right of it. And they're saying, wait, no, I think they've got the right of it. And even though those tensions exist, you think, you know what, I'm going to ignore all that. All that's going to kind of fall to the background because today, Paul has written a letter. And it is going to be read in our service this morning. Paul, the man responsible for us being here this morning, wrote to us. And we could really use some encouragement. We could really use some lifting up. And you're excited because recently your church has gathered together and they've collected a lot of money and they've sent it off to Paul. Because Paul, as Paul is wont to do, has found himself in prison. And you want to encourage him. And so they gathered this money and you sent it with Epaphroditus to take care of Paul and minister to him while he is in prison. And so he's written this letter and the expectation is it's going to be one of thanksgiving. It's going to be one that says, you guys are doing so great. I am so proud of you. Thank you so much. And instead, as this letter begins to be read to you, you realize that Paul has something else in mind. In fact, he only mentions your gift twice. At the very beginning, Paul says in chapter 1, I thank you for your participation in the gospel. And that's it. Until the very end of the letter when Paul says, thanks for your gift, but I didn't really need it anyway. And the rest of the time, he is talking about unity. He's talking about relationships. He's talking about this theology that he lays out of how we make relationships work. And so as we go through the letter to the Philippians, I want you to be thinking about those relationships in your life. If you are just starting out in school and you're looking to make relationships, take some notes, because this is really good, a really good way of building a friendship on the right foundation. If you find yourself in a situation where there is someone, maybe it's here, maybe it's somewhere else, where you are experiencing some tension with, you can't hardly look them in the eye, maybe you should take notes, because Paul gives some of the most practical advice for how to make relationships work. The first thing he says is that there is to be a focus on our purpose. Focus on your purpose. Read it with me in chapter 1, starting in verse 12. Paul says, "I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me, his imprisonment, has really served to advance the gospel, its progress, because it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. Most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are so much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others do it from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel, but the former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but wanting to inflict me in my imprisonment." So Paul says, things are not as good as they could be. I'm in prison, but I rejoice because the gospel is being advanced. He does not care about his own circumstances. He doesn't care about his own well-being, only that whatever is going on in his life is serving to advance the message of the gospel. In Paul's mind, first and foremost, is our purpose. And that purpose is the spread of the gospel. He says, I've got enemies out there who are preaching Christ, hoping to afflict me. And we kind of think, I don't really get that, right? I mean, how is preaching going to afflict someone? Well, Paul is in prison probably because he's been preaching. In the Roman world, if you are trying to convince or convert someone to your way of thinking, philosophy, or religion that was against Roman law, that was illegal and you could be put in prison. So Paul's probably got these people out there preaching Christ, maybe preaching it in Paul's name or under his authority, thinking that that's going to make the Romans say, yeah, Paul, we had it right. Paul is a bad guy. But Paul says, I don't care. Because Christ is being preached. Now, if you're this church and you've got these conflicts and if you have issues with one another, think about focusing on a common purpose, a common cause, the cause we are all called to, which is the spread of the gospel. It is when we lose sight of that purpose that we start falling by the wayside. We start letting all this other stuff come between us, and we start letting all this other stuff take more importance in our lives rather than focusing on what we're supposed to be doing. I remember a couple years ago when Liam was first born, I stumble into the kitchen one morning, and I'm just exhausted, I'm tired. It's about 2 a.m., and I come into the kitchen, and I flip the light on, and I do the, you know, like the vampire in the light thing, and you know, it's bright, and I'm squinty-eyed looking around, and I just notice that the kitchen is just a mess. There are dishes piled up, and if you have kids, you know what I'm talking about, and if you don't have kids, just prepare yourself. Your house will never be clean again unless somebody's coming over. But I'm looking at that, and I'm just going, man, this is a mess. So I think I'm just going to start. So I start putting stuff away, and I start washing the dishes, and I realize that our dishwasher is full of clean dishes that got to be put away first. So I take care of those. And by this time, I'm kind of fully awake and starting to think, man, how cool would it be if I just clean up all of this, and by the time Carrie wakes up, you know, the kitchen's going to be clean. It's going to look great. It's going to be wonderful. So I'm cleaning everything up, and I'm starting to sweep the floor, and Carrie walks in, and she has the look on her face that I so recently wore, only it's mixed with something else that suggests that I've done something not good. And so I'm like, I don't know why I'm in the hot water, but so I start saying, hey, look at all this great stuff that I've done, and I start pointing everything out, and it's not making any difference. She's not any happier than before I started talking. And so I'm like, start pointing more stuff out when the dishes are done. And finally I look up and she just goes, you know, that's great and all, but I just asked for a cup of water. She had asked for a cup of water when she woke up to feed Liam, and I went in, and I was in there for probably like 2 hours, and I'm sure she's like, what happened to him? But I had completely forgotten what I was supposed to be doing. It's not that those things weren't important, it's just that they weren't the most important thing at the moment. When it comes to relationships, we let so many things get in the way. So many things that have some importance and value, but not as much as our ultimate goal, which is Christ and bringing others to Christ. Later on, Paul says in verse 27, let your manner or let your citizenship be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come to see you or I am absent, I may hear of you and that you are doing standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, not frightened in anything by your opponents. This is a clear sign of their destruction, but of your salvation. This imagery of striving side by side, standing firm in one spirit is military language. It's we have been united under a common goal, under a common cause. Do you remember what it was like right after 9/11? How all the political sides just sort of laid down their nonsense, and everybody came together, and the nation, the country united in prayer under a common cause. Imagine how your relationships might be different if you could do the same thing. If whoever you have an issue with, you could lay aside all your difficulties and focus on a common cause. Now, secondly, Paul says, focus on the example of Christ. Focus on the example of Christ. The first 11 verses of chapter 2 are very well known to so many of us. Complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, and being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others as being more significant than yourself. Look not to your own interests, but to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourself, which was yours in Christ Jesus, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing, and he took the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and he was obedient even to the point of death on a cross. So Paul says, if you want to know how to make your relationships work, keep the example of Christ in mind, who even though he could be equal with God, counted that as nothing and humbled himself. He gave up his own rights, his own life for you and I, for our sake. He considered your life to be more important than his own. Imagine how your relationships might change if you approached people with that same mindset, that the other person was more important than you are, that their rights, that their well-being was more important than your own. Now, this is where it gets crazy. Imagine the other person was doing the same thing. Imagine how things might change. But what Jesus says is, you do it even though the other person might not feel the same way. Because Christ did what he did for everyone, regardless of whether or not they reciprocated that love, right? So we are called to behave in a certain way, regardless of the outcome, regardless of how they might respond to us. We behave as Christ behaved. We give up our own rights and our own self-importance for the sake of somebody else. Now, what does he say next? This is where it starts getting a little bit more uncomfortable. At this point, it's all sort of in focused, right? At this point, it's all sort of about what we should do and inside our own heads. Well, then he says, if you want to make your relationships right, look at those who are doing it right. He holds up the examples of Timothy and Epaphroditus in chapter 2, 19 through 30. And he says, these men have the quality that you should be after. These guys are doing it right. If you want to know how to live this life, look at these fellas. When it comes to relationships, identify people in your life who had good, healthy, and strong relationships and ask them how it's done. Follow their example. Look to them and see what they are doing right. And then finally, Paul says, get involved. And he says it on two different levels in a way that's pretty crazy to me. Imagine this morning that I stood up and I said, you know, it's a great day and school's awesome and everything, but there's something that's going on I just need to bring to your attention. John and Billy have been having fights. John and Billy, we got to stand up. Yeah, some of you are late. Thank you for laughing. Can you imagine how awkward that would feel to just straight up call someone out in the middle of a service? Well, listen to what Paul says. Chapter 4, verse 2. I entreat Euodia, I entreat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. So at this point, you're probably feeling a little uncomfortable if you're a Philippian, right? You're probably thinking, man, he's not talking about the gift too much. He's talking a lot about unity. He's talking a lot about relationships. He's talking a lot about letting go of my own problems for the sake of somebody else. Do you think he knows what's going on? Do you think he knows we're having some issues in the church? And then he straight up says, yeah, I do. Euodia and Syntyche, get over it. And if you're Euodia and Syntyche, you're probably sitting here the whole time like, you know, and then when he says that, everybody around you just kind of is taking one step away, right? It's really awkward, but Paul believes it's important to take the onus on yourself. He says, you two work it out. And then what he does next really goes against our grain. He says, yes, I ask you, true companions, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers. So not only does he say, Euodia and Syntyche, agree in the Lord, but he says, church, help them. Most of the time we want to say, it's none of my business. You know, these two are having some issues, but it's between them and we're not really involved. Paul says, it is your business because it is kingdom business. Agree in the Lord and everybody else, get involved. Help them out. And this is also an encouragement to those of us who are going through these issues to bring other people in. Don't be afraid to ask others for help. Don't be afraid to get some mediation going on if you're having a hard time making it right. And then finally, what I like to call the extra super duper practical advice for fixing relationships. In chapter 4, verses 8 and 9 are probably, in my opinion, some of the verses that get taken out of context more than any others. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think on these things. What you have learned, received, heard, seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Most of the time when I have heard that verse preached or taught, it is sort of in the context of, if you want to know how to have a happy life, just think about good stuff. Think about rainbows and sunshine and ponies and unicorns all day, right? Only think about the good things. It's very much the prosperity gospel of think good things into your future and good things will return to you. That is not what Paul is saying. It would be really odd if in a whole letter of talking about unity and talking about relationships, he suddenly switches gears and mentions something totally beside the point. What Paul is doing is giving us really good advice on how to make relationships work. Whatever is true in the person that you think is a liar, think about that. Whatever is honorable in the person you think has no honor, think on that. If there is anything just, pure, lovely, commendable in the person that you're having problems with, think on those things. Imagine for a second, your best friend, maybe your spouse, the person that you get along with better than any other. I want you to imagine what would happen if you spent this next week doing nothing but dwelling on their most irritating habits. Some of you are laughing already. Yeah, you're like, oh yeah, I got a good one. Maybe they chew their food too loudly. Maybe they slurp when they eat soup. Maybe they snore. Maybe they don't clean up after themselves. It could be a whole bunch of different things, right? What would happen if your best friend, your spouse, whoever it is, you only dwelt on the negative aspects all week? What would happen? How long would that relationship last? Not very long. Some of you are doing this. Not very long, right? But we don't do that. With the people we love, we train ourselves to ignore their bad habits for the sake of their good. All Paul is saying is to do that with your enemies. To do that with the people that you are having relationship struggles with. Because the problem is the heart. The problem isn't them. The problem is your heart. We are willing to extend grace. We are willing to extend sympathy. We are willing to extend ourselves in a way that says, I'm only going to focus on your good qualities to the people we like. But what happens is we get into relationship struggles and we have disagreements and they just snowball. and they build up sort of this plaque over our hearts, right? And pretty soon all we can see is their bad qualities. What Paul says is, focus only on the good. Imagine how your relationships might change. Imagine how they might be transformed. Imagine how they might be forged anew if all you did this week is think about their good qualities, about the things that you can admire in those people. As a youth minister for years, and a university minister for years, you constantly run into people, and you guys are this way as well. You constantly run into people that you just naturally don't get along with. You just naturally don't have anything in common with. You find something, anything. Maybe it's talking about football. Maybe it's talking about whatever. Well, actually, Paul gives us a whole list of things to think about, right? Our common cause, our purpose, the example of Christ, the fact that this other person shares the same faith that you have. Focus on those things, and Paul says, the peace of God will be with you. My prayer for you today, no matter where you find yourself in life, is that your relationships are healthy and whole. That you become convicted that you need to figure out ways to make your relationships right, because it's hugely important. It's hugely important. We do not want to undercut the message of the gospel simply because we can't get along, simply because we're annoyed by somebody or we've gotten our feelings hurt at some point. So my encouragement to you is to find ways to make it right. Don't let another day go by without starting the process. And if you need to, bring somebody else along. I would volunteer myself, but there's a lot of you and there's one of me. Find somebody that you can take along with you. But make it right. If there is anything that this church can do for you this morning, if you need prayers, if you need help making your relationships right, we can help you with that. Maybe you need the ultimate relationship. Maybe you need to commit yourself to the kingdom. Maybe you need to put on Christ in baptism and receive the forgiveness of your sins and the gift of the Holy Spirit. We can help you with that as well. Our prayer this morning is that if there is anything that we can do in any way that we can serve you, you might let us know. Whether it's right now as we're about to sing an invitation song, whether it's finding somebody in the hallway, whether it's picking out someone to step aside with, whatever we can do to help, we want to do it. Please come while we stand and sing.